Hello, this is Steven.
Hi, Steven. This is Andrea Caballero from Catalyst for Payment Reform. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Looking forward to our chat.
That's really great to hear. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me about the work that you and Mount Sinai are doing related to population health. And we've had a chance to talk before, but we have an audience listening in today. And before I get into my questions, can you introduce yourself and Mount Sinai?
Happy to. I'll start with Mount Sinai. As some of you may know, it's one of the largest health systems in New York, more than 3,000 physicians in 400 locations. That includes virtual throughout the New York City metro area, one of the best medical schools in the world, and of course, when needed, an array of hospitals and facilities. Mount Sinai really distinguishes itself on value, high quality care and outcomes at prices that are below our peers in New York City. I joined our population health team in late 2015 to build a business unit dedicated to working directly with those who pay our bills, that is employers and other purchasers of healthcare. And want to do so in our business unit collaboratively with them, as well as their health plan partners and advisors, because no one's going to do this on their own. And really the purpose is to work together with those folks to innovate new ways of deploying our assets to improve value for our customers.
Great. Thank you so much for that background. It was a really good segue to my first question, because I know Mount Sinai has experience partnering directly with employer purchasers. So can you summarize what you've been doing?
Yeah, thanks. We do serve employers directly. You know, it's pretty hard to know how to deliver value if you're disconnected from the customer, because I think one of our key principles is Mount Sinai can't do it alone. We don't think the employers can do it alone or the health plans. We all need to work together, and doing so directly helps us to really put our finger on what is valuable to a customer. We serve greater than 400 employer customers and other purchasers of healthcare for an array of services. Those services include primary care focused health centers, and those are commonly at or near the worksite. Centers of excellence for specialty care, including common surgeries when that is warranted, executive health programs, and most recently, in response to the pandemic, services that assist employers in operating through the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, even working directly with 40 purchasers, I'm sure, has given you a lot of experience, maybe with the early customers. You're learning things and you learn things along the way. So what are some of those key things that in the course of working directly with those employers have you learned from the partnerships?
Well, we've been at it for about 5 years, and I think while the learning process never stops, I think those experiences have shown us how to achieve maximum value. And usually it's when you've got a certain set of key principles in place. And I'll just give you kind of a quick list and we can talk about them. First is investing more in primary care. Second, driving specialty care to the right place, and importantly, specialty care that's warranted. Third, aligning the incentives such that we promote value. And then fourth, encouraging competition that's healthy among the providers in a given market.
Really nice that you're able to lay out those learnings and the principles in such a succinct way, but each one of them are pretty meaty. So maybe we can walk through them briefly, one by one. We hear a lot about people investing more in primary care, but what do you mean when you say invest in primary care? What does that mean to Mount Sinai?
And what we heard from our clients is that, you know, primary care really in the traditional sense has been unfortunately reduced to visits to a PCP. And that's largely due to incentives that are in place. And we can talk about those in a minute. Most of our clients just wanted to change that. They recognized that we needed a more substantive primary care that aligns with all of our visions that we have for it. You know, primary care shouldn't just be about visits to a primary care physician. It should be a navigation service. So members to that primary care service should be helped from first symptoms, not helped starting help when it's a visit. And that help should extend through the end of those symptoms. It's, in addition to being a navigation service, it's a prevention service. So focusing on the kinds of habits around nutrition, better sleep, managing musculoskeletal pain, managing stress and anxiety. We know if we manage those things well, we can hopefully keep people from ever having to come see us. It's probably pretty critically also important to focus on referrals in this model. It's a model that should result in less referring activity because internists have been trained to do most specialty care. The ordinary specialty care does not need to be referred out. But when you need to, you've got to refer smart when a specialist is needed. And, you know, and I think all these model elements, if you will, include things that have been sort of disaggregated from the model, like virtual care or telemedicine. And they include things like urgent care, where we've seen separate centers set up for that. Primary care should include all those things. Working together with our customers and their advisors, we've deployed what we call a health center model that embodies all these elements. And what's been great is to be able to deliver primary care people love. We've been able to achieve net promoter scores in the 90s. And when you do that, because you have now the opportunity with enough investment in the model to engage people, not just within a 10-minute visit window, you can really reduce costs by changing from a primary care model that has to refer out because the incentives aren't set up the right way to one that can manage longitudinally. So, and by the way, we are big fans of others that are doing it. One Medical, Iora, I'm going to forget others that are doing this. Point is, those folks and Mount Sinai, we've proven that when you invest more in primary care, that you can get great results and people are actually really satisfied. But all that work, all those elements I mentioned, aren't free. We need to figure out as a system, how can we invest more so we can achieve the promise of primary care?
Well, yeah, the investment isn't free. And as Catalyst for Payment Reform, we certainly are looking at how does that primary care payment model need to evolve? Because, you know, a lot of things, negative things were exposed during the pandemic in terms of how primary care is paid. So that will be another topic. But you talked about in this health center model, the need for primary care physicians to do smart referrals. And they've been trained in some specialties and can manage some of that work, but they will have to refer to specialists. So your second principle was driving specialty care to high-value providers, which maybe fewer people are talking about than the investment in primary care. So what do you mean by driving specialty care to high-value providers in the right time and perhaps not having unnecessary services be performed?
I think, you know, importantly, before I open on this second principle, it's the connection into the first principle is really key. I don't think this works without tight integration between your primary care and specialty care. Almost purposeful engineering of those connections is really key to get maximum value. But to talk about it as a sort of an element, because within specialty care, it's its own set of problems, driving specialty care to the best place is going to end up being really important to maximizing value. Many studies have shown the variance in cost and quality depending on your choice of provider. That choice will mean cost differences in the tens of thousands per episode. And of course, similar studies beyond costs will show that not all providers are created equal when it comes to quality and service that gets delivered. Now, in the traditional model, not much gets done to direct members to the best specialists. You know, what we've been doing is working directly with our clients and their health plans, coming up with strategies where we can try to direct members to the best place for specialty care. We do that through centers of excellence where we are at risk for the outcome on an episode. Oftentimes, that's a common surgery. Because our costs tend to be very competitive, our clients save tens of thousands of dollars per episode by avoiding two things, by engaging us to avoid unwarranted surgeries, and then when it's warranted, steering to Mount Sinai to get that cost difference, if you will, And the combination of those things, it's tens of thousands per episode, and across the number of episodes, millions saved. In these programs, because we get the chance to really change some of the rules of the road, we can engineer a service experience and connect it to our health plan partners and our employers in a different way. And that service experience, the things that we invest in, result in net promoter scores similar to what we get on the primary care side. They're in the 90s. And because we deliver that kind of value to the purchaser and to the person that we serve, the member, we earn a bigger share of spend. And, you know, if you kind of step back from it and think about other industries, the best supplier earning more share from a customer is a pretty commonplace occurrence, you know, outside of healthcare. And, you know, I want to maybe conclude by saying, I don't think that we're in the vanguard here. I think we are benchmarking the work of lots of others. On the purchaser side, there are many who we admire. I think Walmart has probably done the most, both in terms of breadth of program as well as diversity of geography where they've deployed it. It's really impressive what they're doing, and they seem very committed, along with other CPR members, to trying to drive specialty care to the best, highest quality place. And of course, this work doesn't get done effectively without great collaboration, not only with the clients, but also their advisors, their health plan partners.
Yeah, Walmart certainly does, you know, has been on the cutting edge of a lot of different programs and has served as a case study for other purchasers to follow. And in terms of what Mount Sinai is doing, you mentioned in both the first two principles, and they're integrated, primary care and specialty care, and how you're delivering value. You've mentioned the word incentives a couple of times. And so in order to achieve that value, it sounds like that principle of aligned incentives is really important. So what more can you say about that?
Yeah, I think this is the key piece. Obviously, those first two are really important to have the right supplier models in place for primary care and also for specialty care. But basically, if you think about it, the benefits program is sort of where all the incentives live. That's where incentives to the member that's being served are governed. That's where reimbursement to the supplier is governed. And, you know, you kind of almost have to start with that benefits decision. If you look at current benefits, they're basically built today, by and large, there are differences, of course, but by and large, built on a chassis of open access to any provider and fee-for-service reimbursement. And, you know, you've got things like one deductible that governs all, pretty much all the services you could get for medical. So back to my point of we really need to invest more in primary care. There's really, you know, in many cases, based on how things are set up, there's not an incentive to make it, let's call it, less expensive and easier for a member to access primary care. It should be less expensive than specialty care, given what we know about the relative value. But that's not the case in how we set this up, benefits-wise, for the most part. Basically, if you look at an open access network, you've got a combination of very high value providers in there with very low value providers. And so there's really no differentiation to the member in terms of their costs, which one they choose. But as I mentioned in my earlier comments, their decision about which provider, especially for specialty care, is going to be a very costly one if you choose a lower value provider. So on the member incentive side, beginning to think about structuring benefits such that you're encouraging and basically making it less expensive to get access to a transformed primary care model, and then also differentiating between the providers that are available in the community on the basis of the kinds of outcomes they can deliver, both cost and quality. So it really requires some surgery to that benefits chassis, and then also some work in member communications to make members aware after 30 years of fee-for-service open access benefits, for the most part, we're not going to change behavior without a pretty active, purposeful strategy to make them aware of these changes. On the provider side, when you start to structure your benefits, now you're kind of almost giving providers the tools to basically deliver greater value. you know, if you've got a high performing primary care center and now you've got greater reimbursement in primary care, less out of pocket costs for the member, well, now I can do more with that primary care model. And it's funny because I think a lot of employers are supplementing the gaps, if you will, in primary care by, you know, contracting with a whole host of vendors for niche services that really, when we look at them, we probably would all say, hey, that's primary care. So can we reconstruct the benefits to facilitate an easier path into high-performing or transform primary care? And then, of course, make it less expensive to get into centers of excellence when necessary for specialty care. So with those tools in place, Mount Sinai is absolutely willing to take financial risk and look at a population and say, okay, not just on an episode of care, but across the entire population, we now have the tools to be able to engage the population in prevention, and we have the tools to be able to direct care to what we think would be the most efficient setting. And really, it's those differences in referring, ordering, also prescribing that are going to result in a lower cost of care, better outcomes on both quality and service. I think those are the key pieces on incentives for both members and providers.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the provider needing those tools, and those tools start with the right benefit design incentives, you know, it makes intuitive sense, but purchasers have to do their part in terms of creating benefits that encourage the use of primary care or encourage the seeking of care without financial barriers when it's preventive. So I can totally see how those tools that are in the benefits that then providers can take advantage of it in terms of, you know, delivering the care at a high value basis. My last question goes with your last principle related to provider competition. And I'm not sure how much this feeds into the aligning incentives, but as you said, in an open access model, there's not a lot of differentiation between high value providers and low value providers. And some of this might be related to provider competition. It might be more on a system basis. So what do you mean by encouraging provider competition?
Yeah, I think maybe to go start off, Andrea, with just sort of a non-healthcare industry, you know, comparison, it wouldn't be strange for the listeners who are all part of companies that are big companies and procure probably billions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of stuff every year for their businesses, right? And those procurement processes are really rigorous. And to be successful, a hallmark of them is getting a diligence done to identify the top subset of suppliers for whatever it is that they're buying and get them to compete with one another for that customer's business. And what tends to result is we've got better outcomes for the purchaser. We've got better service levels as well as an inefficient outcome from a price standpoint. Then you look at the healthcare that is purchased, and it's not that same head-to-head competition. You know, and I'll just sort of speak for Mount Sinai. There really isn't a competition for the employee's business. We are in a benefit structure with every one of our peers in New York City. And so I'm not sure it's really clear to a health system that they're in a competition for the business of the employers writ large or the purchasers writ large. And I think if they felt that way, what we've seen in our, you know, competitions, if you will, for businesses, we very much have to beat others. And it really focuses our attention on the customer we serve, what they're going through, the affordability struggles that they've got, the worker productivity struggles that they've got. That makes us better when we know that there's not an implicit but an explicit competition with another provider to win the business. And I think, you know, unfortunately for healthcare in general, we're just in, again, this open access. You're right, it does connect into the incentives, but being a part of an open access plan where you've got every provider pretty much, there really isn't the competition to win or lose that employer's business. And then once the benefits are in place, you know, I'm sure everyone has their preferred brands, but there's really not a way to differentiate high from low value. Again, I want to benchmark here versus, I don't think this is very much original thinking. If you look at what Disney has done in Orlando, if you look at, you know, some of what Boeing has done, what General Motors has done in Detroit, they really are trying to directly engage the provider community and basically get them to understand what's going on with the customer. And, you know, when you have that direct contact, that explicit competition, I think what those purchasers would share is that they get better value as a result. And I think the providers, the suppliers, are improved by it as well, because they start to get data. They start to understand, where do we need to improve to be able to help our customers achieve what they need to achieve? You know, I think trying to, as a part of a paradigm shift to greater value, clearly has got to have some way that there's greater direct, explicit competition among the provider suppliers in a given geographic market for the employer's business.
Well, provider competition is near and dear to CPR's heart. It has been for many years, so we'd love to explore this topic further. I know that on a direct employer to provider basis, that can be really intimidating for the purchasers that are not the size of Disney or Boeing or GM. I'd love to explore that topic more with you. I wish we had more time. Maybe we can go into more of these topics on another call, but I really appreciate you sharing this information, sharing it with me and our audience today. So I hope you have a great day and a great weekend. Take care.
Thanks, Andrea. Thanks, everyone.